So we're talking about forgiveness this morning. And for some, that is a understandably difficult topic to discuss. Our past experiences and our multiple hurts that we've endured makes it uncomfortable for us to talk about forgiveness. Another reason for being uneasy about forgiveness talk is because forgiveness can be a terribly perplexing concept. We read of instances where forgiveness is so freely offered in the most horrendous situations, and at other times we read about forgiveness that is withheld. And so it's difficult to understand, is forgiveness easy or is it a difficult thing to do? If you do a quick search on one of New Zealand's popular websites, news outlets, it proves the point among the many examples of forgiveness that pops up on the first page of one of these websites. I found these stories of forgiveness offered in the most horrendous situations and then often forgiveness withheld in others. One man shot his girlfriend and she survived for a few days and emphatically offered her forgiveness while clinging to life support. Regarding the now infamous athlete Oscar Pistorius, the uncle of the victim told CNN, quote, "I would like to be face to face with Pistorius and forgive him for what he has done," end quote. And then among the examples of when forgiveness was withheld, these caught my eye. We read of voters who will not forgive deceitful politicians. We read of someone who wrote of their struggle to forgive an unfaithful spouse. And we keep reading about victims of abuse and crime who are still trying to figure out a way forward, to forgive or not to forgive. And whatever you make of these stories, whether you think people are in the right or in the wrong to offer or to withhold forgiveness, there is no escaping the fact that at some point in our own lives, we are going to have to deal with forgiveness ourselves. Some horrific thing will happen to us where we will need to forgive, or we will do something horrific to someone else and we will need to seek their forgiveness. But if you do life, forgiveness is inescapable. And surprising, it may be especially true in the context of a church. It's true in the context of a church where you rub shoulders with all kinds of people, some of those people who are going to sin against you and some of those people you're going to sin against. The art and the lesson of forgiveness is going to come up time and time again as we do life together as God's people. One commentator, Leon Morris, he reminds us of this. He says, forgiveness is important in a sinful world where all people are sinners. Surprise, surprise. In the first place, because we are all in need of being forgiven. And second, because people keep on sinning against us so that we ourselves are constantly confronted with situations in which followers of Jesus are required to forgive. End quote. And so we come to one of Jesus' teachings on forgiveness this morning. We can travel with him and learn a little something about forgiveness from Jesus this morning. And it so happened that one of his disciples, Peter, had expressed an interest in learning more about forgiveness. Evidently, as a follower of Jesus, he would have likely heard Jesus teach about forgiveness at other times, especially in Jesus' great prayer that he taught people. And one of the things Jesus taught us in his great prayer is to forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. Right? So Jesus had already begun that conversation about forgiveness, but now Peter wants to know more. So he kicks off some thoughtful conversation with Jesus, right? You can imagine the two of them just kicking up this conversation now. And Peter is really eager to find the parameters of forgiveness. He wants to know where the boundaries lie, where the limitations of forgiveness exist, especially among those who followed Jesus. And maybe that's what you're eager to know this morning as well. How much forgiveness is enough forgiveness? When have we done enough forgiving? That's the question. When have we done enough of it as a follower of Jesus? See how Peter asked it in verse 21. He says to Jesus, "Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as 7 times. He's searching for the boundaries, the limitations of where forgiveness runs out. Now, what's interesting about Peter's question to Jesus is that he half answers his own question, doesn't he? He offers an answer to his own question, searching for that maximal limit of forgiveness. And he thinks maybe 7 is the maximal great forgiveness number. If I've done it 7 times, I've maxed out. I've peaked. And for some of us, it seems really strange. It seems really strange to put a number on forgiveness, right? To, you know, whether it be 5, 10, or 20, a number, right, seems strange to us when it comes to the issue of forgiveness. But keep in mind, Peter was suggesting an extraordinarily generous number here. I mean, we count to 7 pretty easy, but you do that in relation to forgiveness to someone who's really hurt you. 7 is a lot. That is a high peak to climb. So this is a very generous offer from Peter. Consider too that the conventional wisdom of his day did not teach him this. Conventional wisdom of his day did not say forgiveness 7 times. It said 3. So rabbinical literature of the time says things like this: if a man commits a transgression the first, the second, and the third time, he is forgiven. The fourth time, he is not. 3 strikes and you're out. That's the kind of culture that Peter was brought up in. To which Peter now makes a generous offer and he doubles the quota, right? Double and then some. 7. That's generous, given the cultural wisdom of his day. Surely, Jesus would be impressed by this disciple of his. But to quote Shania Twain, "That don't impress me much," is perhaps the kind of response he got from Jesus at this point. Jesus was not as impressed as he might have hoped he would be. He went on to say that this quota of 7, as generous as it is in the face of his cultural wisdom and context, Jesus says that quota is too low. It's too low, Peter. And then Jesus significantly raises the bar, right? He's not like, you're a bit short on 7, let's try 10. He goes maximally greater than 7. He says 70 times 7 is Jesus' answer to Peter's question. Jesus says, "I do not say to you 7 times, but 70 times 7. Now, true, there is a translation issue here in our English Bibles. You may have a little footnote in your Bible that says and explains that there's uncertainty about whether Jesus meant 77 or 490, as in 70 times 7. Either way, Jesus is not trying to establish a number. He is not trying to give you a number that you can then perform your forgivenesses upon and then say, "I've done enough forgiving." That's not his point. Rather, Jesus is trying to establish the point that we carry an attitude that is inclined to forgive. that we are inclined to forgive as his disciples. And it's the attitude which Jesus now illustrates in a following parable, right? He goes to explain what he means when he says 70 times 7 as a great number for forgiveness. Now, as you've heard, this parable, and a parable is simply a made-up story. A parable is a story that carries a lesson within it, but it's made up, right? So it's not a literal king that you're reading about here. It is a made-up story that Jesus told. And Jesus told a story concerning a king who went to go settle his accounts, and he calls in all his debts and all those who owed him money. The king wants to settle the accounts now, so he's calling it in. And that is contrasted by a servant who also wanted to settle his accounts of the debt that was owed him. But let's just focus on the king to begin with. Let's begin with the king, which is where Jesus began. Verses 23 to 24 tells us this. The kingdom of heaven, this is Jesus speaking, may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. Now, talents is simply a measure of money, okay? Like cents and dollars are a measure of money to us. Talents was a measure of money in the ancient world. So this guy owed 10,000 units of money. So here's the problem. One of his servants had an enormous debt problem. This was insane, the kind of debt that this guy carried. Given that the combined tax revenue of entire regions in the ancient world in which Jesus lived would amount to about 8,000 talents, right? So that's entire districts where the collective tax revenue is about 8,000. This guy carries 10,000 talents of debt personally. It's mind-boggling the kind of money this guy owed the king. We might say something, his debt ran into the millions, if not billions. It is incomprehensibly large debt. Now, I don't know what kind of debts you carry. We have a credit card of about $2,000 limit on it. When there's a balance of about $50 outstanding, I get nervous. I worry the bank's going to call me up and be like, what's going on, man? You got a balance here. You need to pay up. So at about $50, I start to settle my accounts. I make sure that we square off every month. Comparatively, the servant in Jesus' story was so deep into his debt, he had no hope of repaying that. There was not even the slightest hope that he could make a dent in that kind of debt in his lifetime. But he makes this final plea of desperation, right? I mean, he's in way over his eyeballs. The king's punishment is just. He has to go and pay some kind of restoration for this crime that he's committed. And he falls on his knees and he makes a final plea in desperation. And he says the following, "Have patience with me. I will pay you everything, every cent of my unpayable debt." And out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him his debt. What's the point to all of this? The king knew there was no chance that this guy was going to repay him. The king knew it. It's obvious. It was a ridiculous sum of money that would take several lifetimes to repay. But the king had pity on him. The king had pity on him, and he frees him and forgives the debt simply because that's the kind of king that he is. He is that kind of king. Those who plead for his mercy will receive it. And that's one lesson Jesus wants us to learn about God in this parable. The king is likened to God. Or God is likened to the king, I should say. We all have a sin debt that is vastly more than we could ever hope to repay. But once we ask for God's mercy, God is the kind of king. He is the kind of God who gives that pardon and that forgiveness without hesitation and condition and freeing us from the debt that we carry. He is simply that kind of God. Returning to the story, the servant who had this extraordinarily debt, this massive debt, so mercifully cancelled, just wiped out at a cost to the king. I'll remind you, you know, the king has to now carry that cost himself and make up for it out of his own coffers. But nevertheless, he had this extraordinary debt cancelled. He returns a free man to his work in the world, right? He's free to go. Carry on with your life. Do a day's work. And so we plug into things in verse 28 again. When that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, "Pay what you owe." Again, denarii is simply a measure of money in the ancient world. And the debt in this instance is relatively small. It is a much smaller measure of money than the talents. The debt here could have been reasonably repaid in less than a year. Like, it's not an overwhelming amount of debt to carry. He could have legitimately paid that back. And so when we read the plea of this indebted servant to his fellow servant, when this servant who was so harshly treated said to him, "Have patience with me, I will pay you," it's a far more believable plea for mercy than that former servant who said to the king, "I will pay you everything." What a load of rubbish. He could not repay him everything. This guy could, though. This guy could repay the money he owed. So the two scenarios contrast one another. Each servant owed a debt. They were both sinners, so to speak. They both faced a judgment for their crime. They both pleaded for mercy. But the contrast comes alive in the responses to their plea for mercy. That's where the contrast in the story lies. Where the king freed and forgave the inexcusable debtor as God forgives us, the servant was merciless towards a relatively minor debtor. The same way we often treat people who have a sin debt against us. Isn't that the strange thing about this parable? Isn't that where the bite of the story is? At one moment, we're cheering for the king. Go, king! You are so merciful. You are so forgiving. You are so kind, so compassionate that you would wipe out this enormous debt. Go, king! You're amazing. And then Jesus turns the story on us and he says, "Sometimes you're like that unforgiving servant who holds other people to an account that I have not held you to. You are demanding things from other people that I have not demanded from you." What a sting. What a sting in the story. Sometimes we just find ourselves in the shoes of an unforgiving servant, behaving like him, following his loathsome example, not willing to forgive others. Peter himself was one on the way to doing the same thing, of finding himself in the shoes of the unforgiving servant by making forgiveness cap out or max out at 7 instances. So that when he gets to the 8th time, he could be justified in his own eyes and say, I've done my seven, Jesus, but I ain't doing an eighth. I'm going to withhold at that point. And this is precisely why we'd make a terrible interpretive mistake to take Jesus' 70 times 7 literally, whether he meant 77 or 490. It's not the number that Jesus is concerned with. It's whether we have a heart attitude that is willing to forgive, that considers forgiveness normative as a characteristic of those following Jesus when they have been sinned against. Look, this is not to say that the characteristic comes easy. This is not what I'm trying to tell you this morning. This is not the point of Jesus' story. Sometimes forgiveness does not come naturally to us, and it doesn't come easily. Why? Because wounds of sin are real and they hurt. Being sinned again is no walk in the park. Nobody likes it. Nobody invites it. And yet we all experience it at some point or another. And that's what makes forgiveness hard to come by, isn't it? Even amongst Christians. Sometimes the wounds are so deep, it's hard to forgive. So the question for us, where could we find the resource or the motivation to respond with merciful forgiveness instead of merciless punishment? And that answer lies within the parable itself also. Jesus tells us, we know that the unforgiving servant was a horrible person, right? None of us reads that parable and goes, man, I wish I could be like that unforgiving servant. That's the kind of person I want to model my life upon. We know he's horrible. We know he's the villain in the story. Why? Because his treatment of others does not reflect the lavish debt forgiveness that he himself has experienced. And that's the point. That's the point. That's where our resource and our motivation for forgiveness comes from. Once we see and appreciate how much we have been forgiven by God, how costly it was to himself, and yet how eager and how instantaneously he offers that forgiveness and that debt sin being wiped away from us. Once that transforms you, once you see it, love it, once you bask in it and it lights up your heart and you go, man, I have been so massively forgiven by God. It's at that point that you are resourced to be a forgiving person yourself. It's at that point that you are resourced to extend forgiveness to those who have sinned against you. And I started with a quote this morning from Leon Morris. It said, forgiveness is important in a sinful world because we are all people who are sinners in the first place, because we are all in need of being forgiven, and in the second, because people keep on sinning against us, so that we ourselves are constantly confronted with situations in which the followers of Jesus are required to forgive. Unavoidably, people are going to sin against you. It's unavoidable, even in church. But Jesus taught us, because God so grandly forgave us, those of us who have asked for his mercy, we can know where the resource and the motivation comes from in order to forgive others. And the forgiveness God so mercifully provides for us, so lavishly and so eagerly, because that's the kind of God that he is possible because of Jesus, who loved us and gave himself for us, even to death on a cross. Amen.